All right, so today we're going to do something special on Pesach, and what we're going to look at is a sicha, an in-depth talk of the Rebbe that he gave once on the three names of Pesach. Okay, so if you have a look at your handout, we know that Pesach has three names, right? So in the Torah, the name is Chag HaMatzos. That's the name that the Torah gives to this Yontif. In our davening, which davening, of course, is not just davening, it was structured, especially the Amidah, it was structured by the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. They were the people who made davening, great Chachamim and Nevi'im and so on. They lived between the first and second Beis HaMikdash. They ended like the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai, for example, is one of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, right? Just to put it in context. That was a turning point in Jewish history. They made, formalized a lot of halacha, they made brachas, they made davening, and whatever they made was an amazing, and always had amazing depth and background and so on. So in the Amidah, what we say on Pesach and on Sukkot and on Shavuos, we always, after we mention the name of the Yontif, we add a description, right? So, for example, on Sukkot we say, Zman Simchaseinu, time of our joy. Shavuos we say Zman Matan Torahseinu, right? Tana Torah. On Pesach we say Zman Cheiruseinu, right? So it's a time of our cheirus, time of our freedom, and therefore that is also another name of the Yontif. And then we call it Pesach, right? Which is interesting because we call it Pesach because it was interesting because really. That's what I'm thinking. Really, Pesach is a reference. Simply put, Pesach is a reference to the Korban Pesach, right? The Paschal Lamb. So, if any day of the year should be called Pesach, it's actually Erev Pesach. It's the time that they brought the Korban Pesach. Even now. It's not relevant to this year because this year it's Shabbos, but normal Erev Pesach from midday onwards, the day has special significance. There are actually things you're not supposed to do after Chatzos, after midday on Erev Pesach. It's like a Yontif. It's a little bit like Chol HaMoed, like you're not supposed to sow, you're not supposed to take a haircut, all those kind of things. You're not supposed to do certain melachos on Erev Pesach because Erev Pesach is actually a bit of a Yontif, right? Okay. Nevertheless, for whatever reason, we'll soon see. I'm going to share with you a quick word about this in a minute, but. Sorry?
It's noisy.
You know they close the door because it's noisy. I'm just installing a new door, so it's going to be noisy. So, nevertheless, whatever we chose, Yidden chose to call the whole Yontif Pesach, right? So, became name was Pesach. Everyone calls it Pesach. No one refers to Pesach as Chag HaMatzos or Zman Cheresein. And the Torah is Chag HaMatzos, and davening is Zman Cheresein, of course, and we refer to it as Pesach. Now. So we have to conclude, and this is, the Rebbe was always very into names and how names represent the essence of the thing. When something has two names, we have to conclude that there's some central theme, right? There's some central theme of the Yontif that expresses itself in three different ways in those three names, right? Not only does it express itself in those three names, but also it's got to do with the order. So obviously, first and foremost, the name is Chag HaMatzos. That's the Torah. If you want to talk about the order of the names, Chag HaMatzos certainly comes first. That's the name that was given by the Torah. Secondly, the name given by the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah would come second. They were the Nevi'im, the great people. They called us Zman Cheiruseinu. And then the Minag of the Jewish people, which obviously comes after that, is called Pesach. So there's some theme that's going to express itself in the three names of Pesach. And in that order, right? Okay. Before we go further, I'll just share with you one quick word about from the Kedushas Levi, from the Baditshuva Rav. Baditshuva Rav, as you know, was the great advocate of Bnei Yisrael and the love of Bnei Yisrael and so on. Baditshuva, right? So he says, how come, he doesn't talk about Zman Cheruseinu, he does talk about why the Torah calls the Yontif Chag HaMatzos and we call it Pesach, right? So he says very simply, he says that we find this in Psukim already in Dvarim in Parshas Ki Kisovi, I think, right, where the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people is a loving relationship, and we find that part of that relationship is that we praise Hashem and Hashem praises us. That's how it works, right? Now, we find this example of this idea in Gemara Brachos. The Gemara says, we know this is an idea we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. The Gemara says that whatever mitzvah Hashem tells us to do, he does himself. So the Gemara asks the question, Tefillin the Mori Almo Maksibohu. Right? What's written in the Tefillin of Hashem? If Hashem told us to put on Tefillin, he presumed he puts on Tefillin too. So what's written in the Tefillin of Hashem? Obviously, it doesn't mean physically written. It means what's there, what's spiritually there, whatever the case is, right? So what's written in our Tefillin? In our Tefillin is written, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right? So we're praising Hashem. Hashem knows Hashem is oneness, Hashem is greatness, and so on. Says, what's in Hashem's Tefillin? The Pasuk, Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like your nation, the Jewish people, one unique nation on earth? That's what it says in Hashem's Tefillin. By the way, just on a complete tangent, the B'ditcha V'Rav also once on Yom Kippur, B'ditcha V'Rav once during the week, there was a Yid who dropped his tefillin on the floor by mistake. And Yid was like, a simple Yid, and Yid was like shaken up, and he ran to pick it up, and he kissed it, and he held it, and he committed not to do it, try to be careful, and so on and so forth, right? So B'ditcha V'Rav, whose whole life was defending the Jewish people before Hashem, we would often talk to Hashem, defending Bnei Yisrael. So the story goes, he ran to the Aron Kodesh and he opened it up, and he said to Hashem the following, he said, look what just happened. A Yid dropped his tefillin, and look how upset he was, and look how he quickly ran to pick it up, right? She said, the Gemara says, now tefillin, what's that? What's tefillin? Tefillin is where it says, Hashem Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? So he said to Hashem, your tefillin is the Jewish people. Because your tefillin says, Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz, right? He says, your tefillin is also on the floor, and you have to pick it up. That's what he said. Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, anyway, bottom line is, we praise Hashem, and Hashem praises us. He says, that's why also, Hashem calls the Yom Tov Chag HaMatzos, or we call it Pesach. Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos because Hashem is praising the Jewish people, that we had Emunah, we had faith, and we just followed Moshe Rabbeinu. And when Hashem said, it's time to go out, we left, and we didn't even have time. Hashem said, you have to go out with a big rush, Bechipozoin, right? Because that's the theme of Pesach, is rushing. You've got to rush out. That's why it says in the Korban Pesach, they have to eat it ready to go, they have to eat it with their belts and their sticks in their hand and so on, right? Shoes on their feet. All ready to go, because when it came time, they had to rush out. Whatever that means spiritually, for a different shear. But we just followed up to, and where's that manifested? It's expressed in the fact that we bake matzah because we didn't have time to break any bread. So we're having matzahs. Hashem is praising us for that. That's why Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos.
What does matzah
mean? Matzah means bread that hasn't risen. That's what it means. I mean, the matzah that we eat on Pesach night is special matzah because we make it for the mitzvah. So that's it. Yeah, but that's what the word means. Matzah is bread that hasn't written, as opposed to chametz, right? So that's what Hashem is praising us. We call the Yom Tov Pesach because Pesach also has the connotation of jumping over, and Hashem passed over the Jewish houses that didn't kill the firstborns of the Jewish people. So therefore, we call it Pesach to praise Hashem. So we're praising Hashem, and Hashem is praising us. Okay. But that's a beautiful word. That's not the direction we're going to take now. The direction we're going to take now is trying to look at all three names and understanding the theme that expresses itself through the three names of Pesach. Okay. So the introduction to this is as follows. If you have a look at number 2 on your handout, there's a famous perek, a famous chapter in the Novi Yecheskel, Perek Tezayim, where the Novi talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim. What he describes there is that when the Jewish people became a nation, right? When we became a nation, we were naked of mitzvahs, and you'll see the description in a minute, but we were like nothing, and then Hashem took us, and He cared for us, and He developed us, until He made us His full nation at Matan Torah, right? But he's, in this pasuk, he's talking about Pesach, he's talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it says like this, it says, as for your birth, on the day you were born, and this is a reference to Pesach, right? Loikarato shirech, your navel was not cut. Vamayim leirachatzo, you weren't washed for cleansing. Vamaliach leim lachto, you weren't salted. I don't know, he says salted, babies aren't exactly right. Vahotel leutalto, you weren't swaddled, you weren't careful, whatever it means. All the things that you normally take care of a baby at the birth, the day you were born, that didn't happen. And then Hashem took you, and he developed you, and he nurtured you, and he became up to Matan Torah. But what do we see from these psukim? That the Novi Yecheskel describes, and this is brought down in many, many places, that the Novi Yecheskel describes Yetzias Mitzrayim as the birth of the Jewish nation. The birth of the Jewish nation. It became a new entity. It became a new, something new. They were born, something new. Now, the truth is, just to explain this a little bit, because obviously we were around before Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? Presumably we were even a nation before Yetzias Mitzrayim. But it's not like that, because there's something very unique about what happened in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Before Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Yidden were a people who shared ancestry. We're ethnic group. It depends how you define the word nation, right? If it's a group of people that share similar cultures, or share ancestry, or share genealogy, whatever the case is, then yeah, we were a nation before. But that's not what a nation Am Yisrael means. Am Yisrael, not a people that we happen to have the same father and the same mother. That's not what it means. Am Yisrael means we're a nationhood of one. In other words, we are intrinsically connected to something higher than ourselves. Right? And that didn't happen until Yetzias Mitzrayim. We recognized God. We were children of Avraham Avinu. We were subject to the oath that Hashem took with Avraham Avinu that he's going to redeem us and so on, but we weren't that nation. We were the children of Israel, but we weren't Am Yisrael, I suppose. Right? We still call B'nai Israel, but it means something different now. Right? You look confused.
So at the neshama level,
Well, the neshama didn't really properly express itself till Matan Torah, actually. Because only halachically became Jewish at Matan Torah. But it's the process started from Pesach. So the moment, that's why this is what Yecheskel describes. The moment of birth was Pesach. We weren't exactly properly functional yet. We weren't even our navel cord wasn't cut. But yeah, the birth was Yetzias Mitzrayim, which culminated in Matan Torah. Avraham Avinu already had the neshama, but it was different. And the neshama was passed down. I like to say like it's like a gene that's passed down, but it hasn't yet. You haven't contracted the disease, if you know what I'm saying, right? Sometimes you can carry a gene, but it doesn't mean it doesn't impact you at all, right? I'm talking that's in the negative. I'm talking about how much more it is in the positive, right? The difference between having a gene and catching the gene, right? Okay. Now, what is that oneness? What is that connection that binds us together? What is it, right? So we know that previously when Moshe Rabbeinu was at the burning bush and Hashem appointed him the leader of Klal Yisrael, and he told him to go take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, Hashem said from one very important line, which is sometimes forgotten, or at least one word of that line is forgotten. And that is, Hashem said, "Bohitziach ha'sa'om Mitzrayim, we'll take out this nation from Mitzrayim, ta'avdun es alakim ala horazeh, you will serve Hashem on this mountain." In other words, what's the tachlis, what's the goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Kabbalah Satorah, giving the Torah, right? Now, what is the Torah? And preparation to giving the Torah, we have 7 weeks of the Omer and all that kind of stuff. But now, what is that? In other words, what are we? What's our essence? What does it mean we were born when we left Mitzrayim? We were born to become a Torah nation. That's what binds us, right? Now, when we say a Torah nation, what do we mean? So we know that Torah nation means that we are connected to the Torah. What's the Torah? Torah is not a subject. It expresses itself in academia, but the source of the Torah is not a subject. The Torah is the way it's described in Tanakh, and the way it's described in Gemara and so on, is chemdo genuza shegenuza lachot, one with Hashem, as the Zohar says, arayse v'kutcha bricha kulachad, the Torah is described as the treasure, the plaything almost, that Hashem had close to him, that was his, and his connected to his essence, right? Which is something that transcends people, transcends the world, as the Torah, as the Chazal tell us, that Torah is kodma la'olam. Torah came before the world. What does it mean Torah came before the world? not in time, because there's no time before the world. Time is a creation, right? But it means it transcends the world. It's completely higher than the concept of a creation. And Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim to connect to the Torah. Now, this is very important to understand this is a Torah, because the Torah is not a subject, right? As it says in Tanya, we learned that when you learn Torah, you become connected with Hashem, not just the Torah. And also, even that, even the Seichel, even the wisdom of Torah is a divine wisdom. It's a wisdom which is actually, by definition, it's a gift that Hashem gave us. It's a gift that Hashem gave us to understand and to connect to something which is way beyond us, right? Yeah? We'll see why I'm saying this terminology in a minute. But right, so the idea of coming out of Mitzrayim was being born as a new nation that was going to now connect to the Torah, which is through that connecting to Hashem. As the Zohar says, Yisrael, Oyraisa, V'kutcha Bricha, Kulachad, the Torah, the Yid, and Hashem are all one. But that meant that we're going to connect to something way beyond who we are and who we were. Up until he says Mitzrayim, with all the good things, with children of Avraham Avinu and everything, we were people. Right? We were people. Regular people. Who were limited in what they can connect to. They were limited in how high they could go.
So we lived
Yeah. The Nissan is Ness. Says Mitzrayim has got to do with Niss. And Nissim, of course.
So
right?
That was when the transition occurred.
Okay. Obviously, the promise to be higher than Teva was given already to Avraham Avinu. Right? All this is potentially communicated to Avraham Avinu. It didn't happen until Yitzchak Mitzrayim. Avraham Avinu himself lived like that. Avraham Avinu was a model for Yitzchak Mitzrayim. And Yitzchak and Yaakov, right? So yeah, but as a nation, to be a nation of that can transcend Teva, that's Yitzchak Mitzrayim. We see, I said about Avraham Avinu because Hashem said, when he promised him children, he said, say, Yachutza, go outside, right? So what does Rashi say? Go outside and count the stars. And he said, your children will be as many as the stars, or more many, or higher than the stars. So Rashi says, what does it mean? Why do you say go outside? Obviously, if you're going to see the stars, it means you have to go outside, by definition, right? So Rashi says, it means, go out of your astrology. Avraham Avinu was an astrologer. And he saw in the stars, he's not going to have children. So Hashem said, I'm about to make you a nation that's going to be higher than that. Higher than astrology. Astrology is Teva. You're going to be higher than Teva. But Yitzchak Mitzrayim for a whole nation was like that. We were being born to connect to the Torah. Now, so how do we? So that means, right? Then we go out of Mitzrayim. We have to go through a process where we're able to connect to that. We're able to connect to that higher thing that is higher than us, which is the Torah, right? And that connection is going to express itself in the three names of Pesach: Chag HaMatzos, Zman Chereseinu, and Pesach. So how do we understand this? Like this. In order to understand this, we understand the following. We have to use an analogy of which is often used in especially in Hasidic teachings. By the way, before we get there, this is the essence, our essence being the Torah, is that there's a very famous line from Rav Sadia Gaon, right? The Gaonim lived in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th century, right? Before Rashi, before the Rishonim, the Gaonim lived basically in Bavel, and there's a famous expression, a famous saying from the Rasag, Rav Sadia Gaon, who said, "Umosenu einenu umo ki'im b'toyrosenu." He says, "Our nation is not a nation without our Torah," which is basically the idea that our nation is different than other nations. Other nations have, a language, a thing, and that, right? That's not what we are. That's not what defines us as a nation. What defines us as a nation is the Torah. That's it. Ein umaseinu. Our nation is not a nation because of anything else, but because of the Torah. All right? Okay. Now, we have to take an analogy of a Rav and a Talmid, a teacher and a student. Now, in Chassidus, when we talk about a Rav and a Talmid, we have to define what that means. Whenever we give a moshel of a Rav and a Talmid, we're not talking about a teacher and a student that are sort of in the same league. They're just the teacher happens to be a few steps ahead of the students. Remember, we're not talking about that. The true example, the true description of a Rav and a Talmud means a Rav who's infinitely greater than a Talmud. Right? I don't know. You're hearing Torah from a Gadol b'Yisrael. That's right. Yeah? So, how do you learn, how is the Talmud able to learn from that Rav? Right? So we find the fascinating Gemara. Have a look at number three. The Gemara says that Va'omar Rav Gidl Omar Rav. The Gemara is asking in terms of a question. We'll see the question later. I'm not going to focus on it now, but I want to say the same. It says, Kol Talmud Chacham, any Torah scholar, Hayoshev Lifnei Rabbi that sits in front of his teacher, Ve'ein Sif Soysev Noit Vois Mor, it's an expression, and his lips are not dripping with like dread, right? He'll be singed. In other words, it's not a relationship. What does that mean? What it means is, the way it's explained is as follows. When you have a Talmud that sits in front of a Rav, the first thing that has to happen is the Talmud has to completely surrender to the Rav. This is really important. Why? Because, in other words, it's a very interesting thing, because we'll see how the second thing works. Right, because actually it's almost paradoxical, but so therefore this is a very important thing to understand. Normally you think of a Talmud sitting in front of a Rav, and he's going to come with his skills, with his intellectual skills, and try and understand what the Rav is saying. But actually, the first step is not like that. First step is, you see, if the Talmud comes to the Rav with his intellectual paradigm, he's never going to learn from the Rav. Which means, yes, he'll learn ideas from the Rav, but he's always going to take them. He's always going to take them in the context of his intellectual paradigm. So he's never going to understand the Rav's wisdom. He's going to understand ideas from the Rav the way he understands them. Is that?
His algorithm,
exactly. Yeah. Which is not the wisdom of the Rav. The point of the Talmud going to the Rav, again, when you go to a teacher who just knows more about the subject than you do, that's different. Right, we're not talking about that. We're talking about learning from someone that is on a different level completely, right? Learning from someone that is a different league. It's Ein Aroich. In other words, his way of thinking, his whole understanding of things is infinitely greater than mine. To learn from such a Rav, the first thing you have to do is you have to come with a clean slate. I don't know anything. That's it. I'm just nothing. I'm surrendering. I'm not thinking, I'm not trying to understand my way of life. I'm not trying to mix my algorithm, as you put it, into the process at all. Otherwise, you can't learn from the Rav. That's why the Gemara says, in other words, to put it in the Hasidic terminology, is the first thing you need is total bittul. Total bittul. Surrender. That's why the Gemara says that a Talmud, that Yoshi Lifnei Rabbi, the Talmud that stands in front of a Rav, has to be with complete dread. Dread means Yira. Yira is bittul. Right? I don't know if it means he has to be scared of his teacher, but it means he has to be completely like, I don't exist. Because if I exist, like the Gemara says, that there's a Gemara that says, Kli Reikon Machzik, a cup that is empty will hold new water. If it's full, it doesn't hold anything. If you come with all your bottlemices, then you don't get anything. You just enhance your own nourishment, your own foolishness. Right? So you got to completely empty out. Which is bittul. Bittul means you don't exist, you, and that's why you're sitting there with bittul. And express itself in a bittul, assess yourself of, I'm not moving, I'm not making jokes, I'm not I'm not trying to mix my own mices in it, I'm not even asking questions, I'm just listening. I'm completely surrendered. Right? Stage two is, at the end of the day, the Talmud has to understand it. Right? The point is understanding. So at some point, after he hears whatever the Rav is saying, he's now going to have to reintroduce his own intellectual paradigm. He's going to have to use his brain to understand, right? To understand that which is greater than him. It's a little bit like the two components, and Chassidus explained, a little bit like the two components of the first two of the three components of understanding in general, Chochma, Bina, and Das. So the two main components of understanding something is Chochma and Bina. What's Chochma? Chochma is also the idea of Bittul. It's not even a... Chochma comes to the word, it says in Tanya, Koyach Ma, it's a faculty that I have, but what is it? It's not my, it's the readiness to understand something new. Right? Bina is when you see, wow, a new light, a new thing. Wow, I never thought of it like that. A new perspective. Now I've got to use my brain and try and develop it a bit, right? Okay, that's stage two. Now, even when the Talmud, I want to just go through the three things and then we'll develop it, break it down a bit more. Even when the Talmud, okay, it was total bittul, and he's ready just to hear what the Rav says. The Rav on his part also has to cloak the Seichel, even though he's teaching him something completely new and something beyond the Talmud, but he can't teach it the way he understands it, because the Talmud won't get it, right? So he's got to put it into the clothing of Tzimtzum. He's got to package it so that it's relatable to the Talmud, right? Okay. Even when the Torah packages it in terminology that is relatable to the Talmud, it's still something completely new to the Talmud. Otherwise, what's the point? It's still something beyond the Talmud. It's still something that's taking the Talmud, taking the student to a whole new space, right? But the Talmud that can then use his own seichel, he can use his own understanding to understand it, right? And then it becomes his understanding becomes his learning and his wisdom, and it becomes something that he feels good about. And suddenly he's very present there, right? It's an interesting transition. In other words, step one is you're not here altogether. You just, right? And then you become very present there, because that's what Bina is. You've got to take it and then understand it, right? However, that's not the goal. The goal is, there's a third stage, which is the ultimate goal. Third stage is that when the Talmud was ready to understand that new idea, and he became president, and used his seichel to understand the wisdom of the Rav. But don't forget, the wisdom of the Rav at the end of the day was packaged in terminology that at least made it possible for the Talmud to work with. The ultimate level is that with the Talmud then works with it and thinks about it and processes it and goes deeper and deeper into it, that eventually he gets to the real wisdom of the Rav. The Gemara says, I've forgotten about who, but the Gemara says, right? The Gemara says that I've forgotten who it was, but it was someone who said about his Rebbe, about his Torah teacher, he said that Achar Boim Shnin, after 40 years, he finally reached and understood what the Rav really meant. Right? So let's talk about this 40 years stage kind of thing, right? The 40 years idea is, what happens at the end of the 40 years? At the end of the 40 years, there's this amazing bond that happens, right? The amazing bond is that the Talmud, with his own intellect, which has now been refined and worked through and processed, that is able now to understand the purity of the Rav's wisdom, without even a package. The depth of the Rav's wisdom. So the Rav's wisdom for him was always something new. It was always something beyond him. And that's why first he needed bittul. And then he needed to process it and be present. But even though it was always something beyond him, it was still put through the process of tzimtzum. It was still put through the process where it's not... You don't get the full depth of what the Rav meant. Even though you get something completely different than you. But you don't get the... You understand? But it's after then the hard work... using his own seichel, which followed the Madrego Bittul, where he was ready for something completely beyond him, and he works with his seichel, and he refines it, and it gets cleverer and cleverer, and he goes deeper and deeper, that after 40 years, he's able to understand the real essence of what the Rav meant. Now, let's pause here, only because in this talk, the Rebbe paused there, and he went through a very interesting thing, just to talk about the relationship with the Rav and the Talmud. Because on the one hand, and this comes from the Gemara. The Gemara says, so on the one hand, it says like this, this idea is actually expressed in a very educational, simple strategy that the Gemara says, right? Have a look at number four, just the last part of number four, the last, after the comma. The Gemara says that whenever a Rav teaches a Talmud, the left hand should push away and the right hand should bring close. So The simple pshat of that is, the way it's taught always in teacher courses, I'm talking about Torah teacher courses, right? That you have to have a combination between Gevura and Chesed. So you need discipline in a class, obviously, right? But the Gemara is not talking about a classroom of a high school class. The Gemara is talking about a Rav and a Talmud, right? We're both mature, both want to learn. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. You have to have first left, which is Gevura, Bittul, and then Yamin Makarevus is bringing close. It's a love relationship. You have love and fear. Fear is Bittul. It's more actually standoffish. The Talmud is actually backs off. And Yamin, the right hand, is Chesed. That's the love, the relationship of love, right? And that's how teaching works, right? So the Gemara asks a question. So that's similar to what they were saying here, that you have to have matzah, you have to have bittul and then presence, right? Bittul is first gvura, smoil, it's the left hand, yeah. The yamin makarevus, then you have to have the right hand bring you close so that you're present, you exist, and you're part of the equation, right? Also the word they say about smoil, the left hand is the one that pushes away because the main hand is the right. So if obviously at the end of the day the love has to be stronger than the fear, okay. That's all good things. But there's a problem with that Seder. There's a problem with that order. Why? Because go back to number 3 after the middle dots. The Gemara brings an interesting thing, right? The Gemara says, Gihod the Rabbe, when it came to Rabbe, right? Famous thing that when Rabbe, the great sage Rabbe in the Gemara, when he gave a shir to the rabbis, to his Talmidim, again, we're not talking about primary school classes here, we're talking about Talmidim, which were great Talmid Chacham in their own right. So, kihod the rabbi mekamed the pasach lu rabbanon, before he would start giving a shir, amri milse bedichese. He would say like a little bit of a joke, right? Ubatcha rabbanon, the rabbis would laugh. Yeah? Why would they laugh? And it was good for them because that means they opened their mind, it made them more open to want to learn and to be accepting. And like sometimes when you're stuck in yourself and you're very fakvetch, then you don't want to learn from others. But when you're easy and relaxed and laughing, okay. Then the Masoif, afterwards, Yossi Be'emsa, they sat down with great fear, Upasach B'Shmaitze, and he started to give the shir. Right? The Rebbe says, this seems a bit opposite of what we said before. It seems like the left doesn't come before the right, it seems like the right comes before the left. First you have to like create a nice relationship, like a bit of love, say a good joke, we laugh, you laugh, I laugh, we both laugh together, and then we're close, and then we start the shir. Right? So how does it work? He says no. That joke, and the Gemara alludes to this actually a bit later, that joke that Rabbi would say was to create a relationship between the two people. In other words, that's before the learning starts. Before learning starts. The shoot hasn't begun yet. Right? It's about establishing a general connection. A makivtikach connection. That there is a closeness. That the Rav says, I am the Rav and you are the Talmud. And I want to have the relationship with you. Right? To do that, to establish that, that's not talking about how you start learning, how the Talmud starts to learn from the Rav. That's talking about before. It's a precondition. Okay. So now you know I love you, I've told you a joke, you're my shir, I'm teacher, I want to be there. Okay, now let's start learning. Right? So that's a general chesed that comes before. Right. A few years ago, I gave an in-service to teaching in America. I gave an in-service to teachers who were part of a teacher training program. And I used this model in the start. I'm just bringing it in because I want you to understand what I mean. I brought it in like this, that I said, when you start a new year, the child needs to know that you're interested in him. So I suggested to them, even before the year starts, find out about the child. Maybe call up the child, call the parents, say, you know, I'm really looking forward to teaching you next year. So the child knows that you have an interest in him, so there's already a closeness. But the first day when you walk into class, don't become his best friend, because then the whole class disappears. When the kids walk in class first day, it's got to be, and when I say strict, I don't mean harsh, I mean firm. He needs to know his boss, like the child needs to know, this is a teacher, you're a student, and you're subservient, you surrender. So what was the point of last week calling him up and saying, I'm really interested in teaching you? Because that's to be a pre-connection. The Talmud has to know before he walks into the class, you actually want to be his teacher, right? And that's what happened with the Rabbi. It's not, the Rabbi, when he made a joke, is not talking about the process, the steps of learning. He's talking about the pre-relationship building, right? But when he starts the shir, when the Talmidim of Rabbah learning from Rava, and Rava was infinitely greater than his Talmidim, total bittul. Left comes before the right. Total bittul, then comes the presence of the understanding of the Talmud's part, and then eventually the Talmud graduates to understand the depth of the Rav's Talmud. Okay. Same thing is with the Yidden. We became an Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Just one second. Yeah. When we were born as a nation, and we already knew from before Yitzhak Mitzrayim that Hashem wants to take us out, Moshe Rabbeinu told us, the pre-relationship was built already, but we didn't start the process. Yitzhak Mitzrayim started the process, right? We became Hashem's Torah nation, a Torah decadation. So the same thing Hashem said, that when you come out of Mitzrayim, the goal is Matan Torah, right? The goal is Matan Torah. And in fact, he used the Lashon, he says, when you come out of Mitzrayim, ta'avdun es Elokim al ha'or hazeh. You're going to serve me on this mountain. What's an Eved? The symbol of an Eved, a slave, is totally subservient to the master. Is bottle, total bittle. That's the idea of an Eved, right? That's why we talk about the Yidden being sometimes Avdei Hashem. The part of Avodas Hashem that we call about Avdei Hashem, the being a servant Hashem, that's total bittle. Eved is total bottle. Eved doesn't have his own. In fact, the Gemara says, If a slave goes out and he finds something in the street that is ownerless, that is hefker, and al pi halacha you're allowed to keep it, and the eved picks it up, automatically belongs to the master. That's halacha. If someone's a real slave, halacha takes slave, right? Because he doesn't have his own entity, he doesn't have an identity. So therefore, the first stage of becoming Hashem's nation is an eved. An Eved, you have to be an Eved of Hashem. Surrender. You want to be connected to something higher. You want to connect to a Torah that is beyond you. You want to graduate from being a human, natural human being to being a member of Hashem's nation, which is supernatural, which we achieve through connecting to Hashem's transcendent wisdom, which is the Torah. Step one, surrender completely. Eved Hashem. On the one hand, that's why we had Nasi before Nishma, right? That was Nasa Venishma. We came to Matan Torah, we said, Nasa, whatever you tell us. Not even examining, we're not doing due diligence. Whatever you say, we're there. We've totally lost ourselves. Step one. On the other hand, the whole thing is through Torah, right? This process, the connection to Hashem is through Torah. Torah works, that you have to understand Torah. To understand Torah, you can't be a nobody. You have to use your brain. So you have to understand. So step one is total bittul, but step two is being present and enjoying the Torah and enjoying the freedom that Torah gives you. Chazal tell us that a person is not really a true free person unless he learns Torah. Torah brings chayrus. What does chayrus mean? Chayrus means that I feel free. Now, the Torah, some people think that the Torah is the opposite of freedom, right? Because Torah is very restricting. Yes, what does it mean? First of all, it means we're free to choose. We're free to be connected to Hashem. Freedom means that we feel connected and we feel that gives us that unbelievable freedom. Freedom means that it releases us. It releases us from our finite self and allows us to become something much greater. Right? The restrictions are part of the freedom process. And everyone gave a mashal about if you say we're not free, so how about a tree, right? It's a person says, a tree is very restricted. I'm going to uproot the tree and put it on the table, so it should be free. Why should I have to be stuck in the ground? So after 2 days, the tree will die, right? Because it's not in the ground anymore. Yeah? In other words, being connected means the restrictions of Yiddishkeit is that the restrictions of being connected to Hashem. That's the point. A mitzvah means we're connected to something much greater than us. It's the real freedom. But we talk about it in terms of freedom. Freedom is not the expression of bittul. Freedom is the expression of feeling connected, feeling free, feeling that I understand, I get it, I relate to it, it's me. Right? That's step two. Step three, yes, Hashem gave us the Torah. He gave us the Torah through an amazing amount of tzimtzum, And it's true, when you learn Torah, you're connected to Hashem. That's of course true. And you're hugging the king, like the Tanya gives the mashal. Okay, if you're hugging the king, even if he's wearing 20 clothing, layers of clothing, you're still hugging him. It's true. But he's covered in 20 layers of clothing. In other words, the Torah that we learn is one that we can relate to. It's far beyond us. It's the wisdom of the divine. But still, it's in a way that we can understand it. Ultimately, once we've understood it, once we've got it, the ultimate purpose is to go to the real transcendence. And the real transcendence is to get to the bottom of the Torah and really understand the essence of Torah, which really will happen ultimately when Mashiach comes. Right? It can happen a little bit now. We can work until we really get to the depth of Torah, at least at our level. But it's still a very, very big process. It's a very, very hard process. So that's the three names of Pesach. Let's go back to the three names. Step one, what the Torah tells us, the order. The Torah's name is Matzah. What's Matzah? Total Bittul. I've mentioned this word many times. The Maharal asked the question. The Maharal says, it doesn't bring it here, but the Maharal asked the question that when we eat Matzah on Pesach night, you know, we do things to symbolize the freedom, and we do things to symbolize the slavery. Morer is symbolizing the slavery, right? To remember the bitter times, okay? That's why we don't lean when we eat Morer. Matzah is the idea of understanding the Cheres, right? And yet it's called lechem oni, it's called poor man's bread. Why is it called poor man's bread? So the Maharal explains, poor man doesn't mean a negative poor man, it means a positive poor man. Poor man means you become poverty, positive poverty. It means you get rid of everything that you have. Total bittul, surrender. I'm not mixing any part of me into the equation, otherwise there's no way I can connect to Hashem and Hashem's Torah. So stage one of Pesach is Chag HaMatzah, is total bittul. On the other hand, Shem says, but you got to be a nation that doesn't disappear. I want you to exist and understand what I'm giving you. And that's Zman Cheruseinu. You got to feel the freedom. That's why we all say cups of wine. Wine is more about the taste and feeling the freedom. The Gemara says, wine is Cherus, right? You've got to feel the freedom. Yain in Kabbalah is also, wine is also Bina, right? Matzah is more chachma, wine is binah. You have to understand it with your brain. Yes, step one is total surrender. Let me teach me what you want to teach me. Now I'm going to take what you teach me and I'm going to understand it and feel it and have the happiness and the comfort and the feeling good of understanding the Gemara, of understanding the Mishnah, understanding the thing that we're learning. Right? That's Zman Cheruseinu. But ultimately, what's the goal? The goal is Pesach. What does Pesach mean? Pesach means that we're able then eventually to rise to a level that is completely and infinitely higher than us. And we'll be able to get there. And that's Pesach. Pesach means to jump over. It's the idea of dilu, the idea of skipping, the idea of jumping. And we know that. Chassidus explains that growth can be relative growth. That's when you walk. When you walk, you're growing, but it's small steps. And also, every time you put your foot forward, your other foot is still where it was. So you never really shift, right? Jumping means both your feet go off the ground, you've got a new space completely. And that's the third Madrega, where the Talmud, using his seichel, eventually comes to the real depth of the understanding of what the Rav wanted to teach them. That's the 40-year mark thing, and that's the idea of Mashiach, really, ultimately. But even now, to come to a real space of complete transcendence, where you understand something that's completely infinite, greater than you, and without the tzimtzum, but really understanding it in its purity. And that's the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's the three names of Chag HaMatzah, Zman Cheruseinu, and Pesach. Good.